on our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line. Once a purple night, always a purple night. Stan Verrett. Stan, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, Mike. Great to be with you guys.
Stan, listen, before we get into Saints LSU talk, I got to tell you something. We did Louisiana Line Camp. It's about a month ago. And so we handed out, you know, jerseys and, you know, and shirts to the guys that attended. We had 18 guys from St. Aug. Coach Valdez got it going on at St. Aug. And not a one double extra large in the bunch. All of them, 3X, 4X, extra long, double extra long. Man, Coach Valdez, he's going to have some big dudes up front for the St. Aug Purple Knights.
I love to hear it. I love to hear it. Can't wait to see what they do.
And, you know, he coached at St. James right down the road from where I live. He had great success there, and I think he'll have similar success with St. Aug. Stan, looking at the Saints right now, I think question mark, certainly offensive line, how that'll work out. You got to get a better pass rush. But from your standpoint, having watched them, and I know you watch every game, you come to a lot of the home games here, your thoughts on the Saints as they enter the 2024 season?
Well, of course, the big question is, how is this new offense going to look with Clint Kubiak? Because I think they have a lot of the pieces necessary to make it work. If you look at what they did with the 49ers, we expect to see a lot more motion. We expect to see a lot more play action, you know, a lot more deception. I think too many times, especially in the passing game last year, the Saints just lined up and just ran the play. There was no motion. There was no deception. And so I think they made it too easy on defenses a lot of the time. And so if you look at that, at 49ers attack, it starts with those zone run reads, you know, going back to Mike Shanahan with the Broncos, you know, that same offense. And then they build play action and deception in from there. So, you know, like you mentioned, the offensive line, I mean, it takes a mobile athletic offensive line to make this work. I think they have the Trent Williams of the future and Fuaga. I think he's going to be a star at left tackle, but the Saints need some luck. They either need Ramchek's knee to hold up, or they need Penning to take the next step on the other side. Because, you know, you know what you got in McCoy, you know what you got in Ruiz. They're expecting Saldivari to be able to step in and play every down at the other guard spot. So if you get some luck at right tackle with either Ramchek or Penning, you know, the offense should be pretty good. I mean, Kamara can be as productive as McCaffrey. I mean, I really believe that. His yards per carry has been down a little bit, but I think a lot of that's the offensive line. I mean, I think if you give him what he needs, he's going to do his part. And then, you know, if you look at, you know, Kittle, I mean, Juwan Johnson's an athletic tight end with receiver skills, just like they have with Kittle in San Francisco. I don't know what his plan is at fullback, because I don't know if Prentice can do the kinds of things that Juszczyk can do, because Juszczyk's kind of a Swiss Army knife. And I don't really know if they have – I mean, Olave is more of a Brandon Ayuk than he is a Deebo Samuel. So I don't know if they have a player that can be as multi-purpose as Deebo Samuel is, because he's a big part of making that whole thing go in San Francisco. Or if they're going to sort of tweak that a little bit, get the ball in Rashid Shaheed's hands on jet sweeps and wide receiver screens and that sort of stuff, take advantage of his speed. Whereas, you know, with Deebo Samuel, you get a lot of run after the catch from him breaking tackles and getting an open field and guys making business decisions about whether they want to run up on him or how they want to run up on him. So maybe you can tweak that with Shaheed's speed and still use him almost as a threat at or near the line, just getting the ball in his hands.
Stan, Charlie and I were talking about this yesterday, and, you know, that year three sometimes is when that wide receiver takes that next step. And clearly Olave is the number one guy. But I think the breakout guy is Shaheed. He's entering year three, too. Man, he's scared of bejesus out of you when he takes off downfield. Man, you see those cornerbacks, man, they in the reverse position really quick. And if you do that early in the game, I think that sticks in a cornerback's mind. You know what? They can do exactly what you're talking about, that little short stuff. Because you can turn right back around, throw that little short pass, and you one-on-one with a dude that can, man, he is fast, and he's fast with helmet and a pads on. A lot of guys are fast, but you put that helmet and those pads on, they're not nearly as fast. He's really fast with a helmet and pads.
And, you know, if you're playing a single high safety, that safety's got to creep over to that side. If you play two high safeties, you know, that safety on his side has to be aware of that corner getting beat, and then that's going to open up so many other things, you know, for other players. So, you know, if you know, and then a lot of it, I mean, we didn't mention Derek Carr, but a lot of it comes down to Derek Carr. There's going to be a lot more, I think, decision-making for him in this offense because of the way they use misdirection and the way they get everybody involved. So, it's a critical year for him to settle into this and make the right decisions, get the ball to the guys. I mean, look, they took Brock Purdy and made him into what he is. Now, he's got great players all around him, okay? And so it's not all Purdy. But Purdy made it go. He does what he needs to do in the scheme of what they're doing. And I think Derek Carr has the ability to do that. He's got to make the right decisions and get the ball to the guys where they can make plays.
Stan, we saw last year they had the ability to get turnovers. The problem was they couldn't get a pass rush consistently.
Right.
And we saw, you know, Cam, 35 years old now, and he fought some injuries throughout the season. Man, we still don't know anything about Peyton Turner. He's still a Marvel Mystery Tour with him. Now, Carl Granderson, man, he's a player. He can play.
Yep.
And you can tell real quickly. They need the Peyton Turners of the world. Brian Brisset, who I thought played well last year as a pass rusher.
I did, too.
I thought he did a good job. And Isaiah Foskey, they need all to take that step. Now, I like what I saw from Brisset, because he can give you a big pass rush from the interior, and he ain't no small dude. I mean, he's a big guy coming at you.
I like Christian Boyd, too, the kid from Northern Iowa. I think on the interior, I think he can be disruptive as well. But, you know, again, they need a little bit of luck. They need Chase Young to be the best version of himself. Yep. Because I mean, in passing situations, if you could put Jordan, Granderson, Brisset, and then if Christian Boyd can help out and Chase Young, I mean, you got a rotation of five guys who can get to the passer. You know, two from the interior and three from the exterior. And so you got some options, you know, on downs that, you know, third and fours where it looks like it could be a passing down. You don't really lose as much against the run, but you still got guys who can get after the passer if it turns into a throwing down. But I mean, that's 28th in the league in pass rushing last year. I mean, that's the glaring hole, because I think Willie Gay will help out.
I agree.
Linebacker. And that already a strong group. I mean, Warner and DeMario have been fantastically productive. You know, and DeMario never misses a game. I mean, Warner's had some health issues, but when he's in there, I mean, he's always in the right place. And so Willie Gay can help there, and then I'm glad things worked out with Lattimore. I think that would have been a bigger loss than people. You know, I saw a lot of trade talk and stuff on social media. I'm like, you know, a part of being a great cornerback is when you don't hear his name.
That's right.
You know, when they don't go after him. And, you know, I think that's still one of the real strengths of the team is that corner. And you don't let a player like that get away.
Yeah.
Stan, one of the things, too, is, man, you and I have seen a lot of football, Saints-wise.
Yep.
Good and bad, okay?
Yeah.
And until Sean got here, it was a lot more bad than it was good. But that cornerback's position, that had never really been a strength for the Saints. And now, you look at it today, with Lattimore, Paulson Adebo, who I thought had a really good season last year. And then you got Alante Taylor, and then you got a little bit of luck. Because Kool-Aid McKinstry, he would have been a first-round pick, but he had the foot surgery. And we all know sometimes a medical can drop a guy. It might be 8 or 10 spots in a draft. Stan, this football team has never had four cornerbacks like that. Never.
No. And, I mean, look, it's a passing league now. And, you know, you need to be able to go at least three deep with guys who can really cover. And like you said, they got four. And then, you know, Tyrann Mathieu back there is still a veteran presence who knows where he needs to be, can sniff out plays, and can be opportunistic. So if you can cover one-on-one with those corners, and you can allow Matthew to kind of freestyle, you know, and pick his spots. I mean, then you got, you know, you got some good things potentially happening, because they got to get after the pass rusher and they got to create turnovers. Get after the quarterback and they got to create turnovers.
And I mean, that's what I was going to mention as far as the cornerback room. It's among the best in the NFL. Those four guys are just elite. And so you need help from the pass rush. But at the same time, as you mentioned, Willie Gay Jr., I'm glad you brought him up, because I feel like he's kind of been under the radar, Stan, as far as like national signings, a 1-year, $5 million deal for someone like Willie Gay Jr. And just the fact that the Saints had so many issues last year, Mike and I have talked about this a bunch, with running quarterbacks. And guys that aren't even necessarily known for running at the quarterback position, they still had issues with them. So having someone like Willie Gay Jr., who's got that great elite speed, can definitely help them as a spy potentially, but also factor into that linebacking room. And I think that, once again, he's been kind of under the radar, because at the end of the year, Willie Gay Jr. comes to mind as someone that we're going to say, oh yeah, that was a great signing by the Saints.
Absolutely. And the other thing, you know, going back to the corners, you got willing tacklers among these corners. I mean, these aren't just cover guys. I mean, Lattimore and Alante Taylor, Paulson, the D-Wood, they'll come up and stick it to you when they get the chance. So, you know, I think, look, there's a lot of pieces there. I think they're a team that's under the radar. There are not a lot of expectations. But I think if they can settle into this offense and just get a little luck in a few places, I mean, Peyton Turner or Hoskey, or Foskey, one of them, I mean, Peyton Turner's playing for a contract now. They didn't pick up his option. So, you know, he's got the motivation to show the production that they expected of him. You know, but they need one of those guys to show some flashes of what they can be. And then that right tackle position with Ramczyk and Penning. I mean, I like Penning at right tackle. I mean, that is a large human being, and when he's bearing down in the run game, I mean, I think, you know, that could really help him get rolling, because, you know, playing left tackle in the NFL is a lot for a young player.
You better be a special cat to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You usually got the other team's best pass rusher coming at you, and you're protecting the quarterback's blind side. There's a lot invested there. And so I think this move to the right side, maybe just for now, you know, or if Fuaga's who they think he is, I mean, maybe that's the future. Those two guys are tackled.
Stan, your initial thoughts, I don't think we talked about this post-draft, but okay, Atlanta spends all this money and signed Kirk Cousins, and then on draft day, they pick Michael Penix Jr. And, you know, Deuce and I looked at one another when they made the pick, because, you know, we thought it would be a pass rusher. And they had kind of fallen in love with Latu. Now, my understanding is what you saw on television with Terry Fontenot talking to Arthur Blank was he's trying to tell him, we're trying to get back in round one to get Latu, the pass rusher. They couldn't do it. But your initial thoughts, it has been the first time in NFL history that you spend that kind of money on a free agent quarterback, and then you spend a first-round pick on the same position. So Penix might not play for 2 years unless Kurt goes down, and you still have a hole at defensive end and at corner for the Falcons.
Yeah, I don't really know. Look, I think Penix is a really special player. But if you look at needs, I mean, as you know, Mike, there's two schools of thought. One school of thought is you take the best player available regardless of position. The other school of thought is you draft based on your needs. So it didn't look like a need, you know, and I've heard, I think it was, I can't remember if it was Raheem Morris or Fontenot who said, if Penix doesn't play for the first 5 years, you know, for 4 or 5 years, then it means, you know, they're in a great place because Cousins, you know, has been that good. But yeah, I don't understand it either. Unless this is a play for longevity, with the front office and the coaching staff saying, hey, you know, this is our guy. And, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, you know, if things aren't working out, let's see how it works out with Penix. I mean, I don't really know what the rationale was for doing it, or maybe it's just, hey, we think this guy is so special that we will take him right now, and even if we have to wait 2 or 3 years. Now, he's not a young guy to begin with.
No.
You know? And so it's really puzzling. I mean, it really is puzzling. But, you know, you never know. I mean, look, if Cousins goes out and gets hurt early and then they rally behind Penix, they look like geniuses. You know, so, I mean, you never know. You never know how it's going to play out.
Dallas to Donut Stand, that was not a call by Terry Fontenot or Raheem Morris. That was Arthur Blank saying, I want Michael Penix Jr., draft him. You know, and so it's, yes, sir, that's who we're going to pick. Right. But how are we going to get better at defensive end and at corner? And I think what people saw on television at first, it was all the explaining to him about picking Penix. Come on, Arthur Blank long knew they were going to pick Michael Penix in that spot. You don't need to explain to him anything. I think the thought process was, hey, we're trying to get back in so we can get a shot at what they consider to be the top pass rusher in Latu. Your thoughts last year on Baker Mayfield, because that surprised me just how efficient he was. And in a soft rebuild for the Bucs, man, they look pretty damn good, Stan. I'll be honest with you. Defensively, and they ran the football well, but Baker was a good fit in what the Bucs were looking for, and he made it work. Because it was, you kind of got to do it now. You're not going to get a lot more chances.
Yeah, I think I think the Browns overreacted and panicked. He had that terrible playoff game against the Steelers, and I think they overreacted and panicked, and you know, it's kind of hard to live with that for an off season. And so I think they kind of gave up on him. But I've always been a fan of his because he just has that thing that good quarterbacks have to have in terms of their leadership, getting guys to believe in what they're doing, and then making plays on the field. I mean, I've always been high on him. I mean, he's a really, really talented guy who just, you know, those intangibles. Like somebody was asking me about, I got some friends on my wife's side of the family who are from Chicago, and they were asking me about Caleb Williams. And, you know, is he going to be finally the answer to the question? I mean, you know, in the NFL quarterback, you don't know until the guy's in the situation. And he's processing things, and he's got 300-pound guys bearing down on him, and the lights are bright, and you know, it's a lot of responsibility mentally and physically. And so you just don't know how a guy's going to adjust to that until he gets into it. I mean, I thought Bryce Young would be much better at this stage than C.J. Stroud, you know? But Stroud got in there, and it looked like he was totally comfortable, and he was able to utilize his ability because he was comfortable in the situation. Whereas Bryce Young, I mean, that O-line wasn't great. But Bryce Young looked like a rookie. You know, he looked like he was struggling to process things and kind of didn't know what was going on sometimes. So you just don't know. There's so many factors that go into it. You know, the offensive line, the playbook, you know, just the guy's personal makeup in terms of how they deal with pressure, how they deal with expectations. And so, you know, Baker Mayfield, to me, always showed that he could deal with all that. He just had a terrible playoff game against a division rival in a horrible performance. And the Browns said, okay, well, we're gonna try something else. But I think they gave up too early, and I think Tampa Bay benefited from it.
Stan, thanks so much for joining us. Always appreciate your insights, bud. And, again, your Purple Knights, man, they're on the right track, brother. Believe me.
All right, let's hope we're talking this fall about a state championship and the Saints going to the playoffs.
Okay, but I don't know about going that far, Stan. But we're going to have good talks about it. I will say that.
Hey. It's July. We can dream.
That's it. Yeah, you got to dream it before it happens.
There you go.
Yeah, Mike Ditka said that. That's one of the few things I do remember he said, but he did say that. Stan, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Thank you, guys.
All righty. Stan Verrett, ESPN anchor. See him every – man, he grew up here in New Orleans, Purple Knights, St. Aug, always talking about the Purple Knights. But, man, he's really hit it big as an anchor on ESPN.